And I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 872A.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 872A allows former spouses of judges to receive benefits under the public employees retirement system by allowing either all or part of the pension that's paid to a surviving spouse to be paid to a former spouse. So there's an emergency clause in the measure effective on passage, and the bill passed unanimously out of the Senate Commerce Committee and out of the Senate on a 27-2 vote.
Thank you. I have Robert Rosenthal, James Richardson, and Lisa Moultrie. I hope I got that right, Lisa. Come on up and help us with this bill here.
Yeah.
Oops. Whenever you're ready.
My name is Robert Rosenthal. I'm an attorney in my own firm, Robert Rosenthal, PC, and I've been a member of the work group on this bill, which has included representatives of PERS. The reason for this bill is when the judge's plan became part of PERS in 1993, unlike all the other PERS provisions, former spouses were not given the right after a divorce to receive survivor benefits. This bill adds a clause that allows a former spouse to receive the benefit if awarded by the court. The court can divide between any number of spouses to decide what portion of the survivor benefit will go to the spouse. We're just trying to get it on a little more even playing field as to other state employees. There's no reason that I know of to leave the spouses of judges out of the post-divorce situation.
Go ahead, ma'am.
My name is James Richardson. I'm an attorney. I'm a partner in the firm of DeBast, McFarland, and Richardson. Sitting on my left is Lisa Moultrie. She's a client of mine. She's the wife of a retired judge currently in payout status with PERS, and she's the person to whom the benefit of her many years of marriage to this judge would be denied in the current PERS plan. I'm going to let her tell her story.
I was married to Tom Moultrie. I'm currently still married to
ma'am,
him.
Ma'am, you got to identify yourself.
My name is Lisa Moultrie, and I was married to Judge Tom Moultrie. Still am. It's 20 years now. During this time, I worked briefly with the law firm of Wetzel Linda Frang. I did leave that firm with my second pregnancy and stayed home to raise both of our children. I did a lot of high school volunteer work. I never did go back into the workforce. I have no IRA. I have a small annuity that cash out is not very much. A major hospital catastrophe would wipe me out totally. I have no pension plan. I have nothing. And without this pension, I won't have anything except minimum Social Security to live on.
Any questions? Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I understood the testimony of the gentleman here, the provisions under this are different for judges than they are for other PERS.
Under the current law, PERS employees under a qualified court order in a divorce, a court can divide PERS benefits between the member and the non-member former spouse. That's how it works for most PERS employees. But under the judge's plan, there is no provision for a qualified court order. There's so the PERS administration takes the position they have no legal authority to give a former spouse a survivor benefit, since the statute just reads spouse, doesn't say former spouse. So under the current law and proposed OARs under this, a former spouse would not receive a survivor benefit.
So let's be clear. What this does then is allow the court the ability to divide it doesn't say that they will.
That's right. Representative Berger, the court is given the ability to divide. It could then give it all to the former spouse or part to a former spouse. They can give all or part or none.
Just as they would, excuse me, Mr. Chair, right? Just as they would under other PERS members' provisions.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Do we know, is this just an oversight, or was there some reason for this?
Well, the best I can answer is that Mr. Rodman testified at the public hearing in the Senate when that very same question was asked. He said approximately this, that the judge's plan was merged into PERS in 1993. That was the same time the amendments came in to allow former spouse benefits for PERS employees, and it wasn't when they were putting the bill together, they were working on the PERS, and when the judges came over, nobody worked on it at that particular time. So as far as I know, there's no special reason why it was left out. It's just that it came along at the wrong moment in time that it joined the PERS system. That's based on Mr. Rodman's testimony.
Representative Holden. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask a question. I mean, it sounds like what I'm hearing, and I just wanted to get this straight, that the survivor benefits for pensions for judges under this bill would be the same as for other PERS employees?
That's actually not right. The judges have their plan has a different history. So a judge is allowed to have either a two-thirds of their lifetime pension benefit to the survivor, or the judge can elect an 80% survivor benefit if he reduces, or she, if the judge reduces the lifetime pension. So what happens is when a judge retires, they make an election. If they make no election, there's a two-thirds survivor benefit. They make the election and pay for it, they get an 80% benefit. That's different than a state employee. We're not asking for to revise the judge's plan. We're only asking that the former spouses, be given the opportunity in a divorce to receive the benefit.
Thank you for that clarification.
Any more questions of these nice people? Just so I have this clear then, it would be the judge would elect to allow for the surviving divorced spouse to have a benefit, but after that judge passed away, would it automatically go to the former spouse, or would the former spouse have to go in and sue for it?
No, you don't have to sue for it. The way the work group set this up, the way PERS...
Excuse me, let me clarify. Let's say the judge is married for all these years to a devoted mother and wife. He's an ornery buster, gets divorced, marries somebody else. Does the second wife get the entire PERS, or does the spouse that was with the ornery buster all them years before get it? You see where I'm going with this?
Okay. Under current law, the second spouse gets all. The first spouse gets none.
Right.
What we've proposed is to give the court the discretion to allocate between the two spouses. The election would then be made even after retirement, allowing a former spouse a portion, whatever the court ordered.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Representative Berger.
Yeah. Okay, so how does this work? Is this moving forward under this or moving back? In other words, can former spouses who have been cut out now go back to the court, their divorce court, and say, I want a piece of this purse?
No. The law is effective with the emergency clause after the governor signs it, and it's prospective, so it doesn't change divorces that were final prior to the date the law becomes effective.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Holden.
Just one more. So does the judge have anything to say about where this benefit goes under this proposed legislation?
Well, I would hope the judge would make their views known in the dissolution, the divorce proceeding, to the court to weigh the judge's view. So just like a PERS employee right now has an opportunity in the divorce to have their say, a judge would have their say. It would not be to PERS. It would be in the dissolution proceeding.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you.
I have a...
Oh, yes, Representative, please.
I think I'm more confused now than I was before, but I have a question. If this was done in 1993, why would we not have done it sooner?
As far as I know, no one has brought it forth in front of the legislature since 1993. I'm not positive, but I have no knowledge of anyone coming forth with an amendment before this time.
Okay, thank you.
Things change. Any further questions?
Mr. Chair, I apologize for being late.
That's
but I just want to make sure
I
understand from reading the staff manager summary, it looks like the bill would just put judges on a par with what all other PERS retirees have, how their survivor benefits are handled right now. Is that correct?
Conceptually, under the judge's plan, the benefits for former spouses under the judge's plan is different than the benefits for former spouses under the PERS plan. What it would do is allow former spouses to have the rights to the extent the court would give them, and that's similar to PERS and be on the same level playing field. It's just the two plans are different. We're not creating any new benefits here. We're just dividing existing benefits.
Any further questions? All right. Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to testify to Senate Bill 872A? Did you have another question? Oh. Anyone else? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 872A. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 872A. Representative Espinel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 872A to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Espinel, I move Senate Bill 872A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right, Christian, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Would anyone like to volunteer, Representative Espinel? Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 872A. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 982.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 982 updates the definition of telecommunication service and statute related to the regulation of telecommunications utilities. And you have in front of you a -1 amendment, which I believe most of the people here in this room are here to discuss today. It retains all components of the original measure, but also adds additional provisions which deregulate some services that are provided by telecommunications utilities, such as bundled packages for multiple services and custom calling features such as caller ID. And there is a synopsis of the amendment on page 2 of the staff measure summary. The bill passed out unanimously out of the Senate Business, Transportation, and Workforce Development Committee and passed out of the Senate on a 26-2 vote.
Well, the good senators that were coming here aren't here. They may be here any moment.
Yes.
Do you have any recommendations? Shall I just call?
No, I know.
Call it first.
Never mind. Okay.
Senators aren't here. I guess I can just go right down the line.
Yeah.
All right, I'm just going to go right down the line here. Actually, I'll go Brant Wolf, Lee Beyer first, please. Because I think he's going to want to talk about the amendment. Yeah, please.
Well. You go ahead, sir.
Go ahead, Lee. We'll go with you first, Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Lee Beyer. I'm the chairman of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. And I think what you have in front of you in the main bill, not the amendment, the main bill, Senate Bill 982, is the product of a, a little over a year, maybe a year and a half work group that the last legislature formed to consider changes to the telephone telecommunications regulations in the state. That work group, as I said, met for a long time. Representative Rosenbaum, Representative Butler, Senators Devlin and Nelson were guiding members of that group, as were the rest of the members were Represented from the Citizens Utility Board, and then the rest were all telecommunications stakeholders. The product of that, after a long, long, long discussion, was there was very little that the stakeholders could agree upon. They did agree upon two things. One bill you've already passed, which was a change in the Universal Service Fund registration that allowed the PUC, if the federal government adopts that law, to make changes to it. And the second piece is this, which is really nothing more than a mere cleanup of the definition of telecommunications. The commission supports this bill. It's just a nice little bill, and it goes forward, and that's just fine. Also, what I think you have in front of you are two other amendments. I'm not sure if you have the dash twos or not, but I've seen the dash one or the dash two. Where they're the originate of those amendments are a bill that was originally considered in another committee, Representative Povey's committee, called House Bill 2621. That bill was a fairly finely crafted compromise between some of the incumbent telephone providers, Quest, Embark, and CenturyTel, along with the commission, that to do a fairly light deregulation of the wireline industry and add a number of consumer protections into that bill. That bill now in the form, that bill could not get out of committee, to be quite frank. Strong opposition from other members of the telecommunications industry to it. What you have in the dash twos is frankly just a stuff of that bill into this one. I don't know whether that'll be moved or not. What you have in the dash ones is sort of a half of the compromise that was before. You have the dereg provisions less the pieces that the commission felt were very important to have in the bill. What was in the bill that the commission is very concerned about is the pieces that allow the commission to monitor the industry, and that's basically requirement for registration of all other telecommunications providers, and frankly access to get the information to monitor the industry and report back to the commission or to the legislature. Most important of that requirement is what we felt was a weight, if you will, that would protect consumers was what we called a clawback provision or a re-regulation provision that essentially said that should we deregulate the industry, we had the right to re-regulate it in part or in whole if we found that there was not a competitive market there. The reality of that is without the provisions that are now left out, sections 13 through 15 of the prior bill, we have no ability to get that information and no ability to make that determination. That became very clear to the commission as we did a case actually about a year and a half ago. Quest asked for deregulation of business services, and as we tried to do that, quite frankly, we couldn't get all the information we needed to make what I would consider to be a very well-informed decision. We turned that down because we found, based on the information we had, that the market was not competitive with a few exceptions, basically being the Portland metro area. I think you'll probably hear about that from some others. So there are some concerns about that. Without that information, the commission is very concerned that we have the tools and the ability to protect the industry. The other thing that I would tell you, quite frankly, when we were supporting 2721 is we felt it was a trade-off. We were very interested in getting the tools to protect the emerging side of the industry, the wireless, the cable industry, that's really going to bring on the competition, and frankly, it's unregulated currently. And we thought that was a reasonable trade-off for the other side, even though we had great concern of what would happen to the business community with that. They're probably most at risk. You think that that was odd, but they're really the community that's probably most at risk as the industry moves forward. I think the competition that you'll hear others talk about is the oncoming competition from both wireless on the residential side and from the cable companies that are getting into the business. It's not there yet, but it's going to be there. And you're also seeing an emergence from what's called voice over the internet protocol services. That's essentially basically that's what cable is VOIP. That's the short term. But there are other providers out there that's coming along, some of which is by the incumbents themselves selling broadband services and replacing their own lines with that. So the industry's a bit in turmoil, hard to monitor, but there's emerging competition. I'm not sure if it's there yet. All I can say is in our last rate case, at least for business services, we could not demonstrate that the competition was there and had no way to monitor that. So I guess I would put it down as saying we support the base bill as it is. We have great concerns about splitting the bill apart, as is the case in the Dash 1 amendments, and feel fairly strongly that we will not have the ability to protect ratepayers if you choose to do that. Just with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. I just want to get this out there before we go to the rest of the panel here. That Dash 2, we don't have copies of it. Be quite frank with you, that's been run up the flagpole in another committee, and we ain't running it up the flagpole in this one because we've done that, and for the sake of time, we will be hearing at minimum courtesy the Dash 1s and listen to the proponents of it. But we are not good. The Dash 2s, I don't know where they are, and I don't care where they are, but we're not gonna go down that in this committee at this time. So, Mr. Chair, stay where you are. I want to go to the good senator.
Oh.
And thank the gentleman for giving him his chair, but that's the way it goes around
and
here.
And, Mr. Chair, just to clarify, House Bill 2621 was referred by the Consumer Protection Committee to the House Committee on Elections, right. Ethics, and Rules, on which the good representatives Berger and Esquivel and I all serve. So that's where that bill is.
Can't get away from it.
And Representative, God bless you. We ain't spending any time on it in this committee. Thank you very much.
Yes.
We will be spending time on that.
Looking for a happy.
Senator, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I just came from a subcommittee meeting of Ways and Means that both the chair and vice chair thought would be very productive today, and due to some last minute problems, we opened, after 20 minutes of debate, we opened and closed the work session in 30 seconds to meet on a future date. Here today, I'm here to talk to you about a relatively simple bill. The bill came from the SB 17 task force.
Senator, yes. You've been told by smarter people than me that you got to identify yourself.
Oh, yes. I'm always asking people to do that, but never do that myself. I'm Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19. During this last interim, I, Representative Rosenbaum, Representative Butler, and Senator Nelson had the good pleasure to serve on an interim SB 17 task force on telecommunications. We discussed literally every aspect of telecommunications that you can possibly imagine with many of the people that are here to testify today, and probably a few people that are here to testify that actually probably came to our hearings also and testified. The good chair of the PUC came faithfully to every meeting, as did most of the other two PUC commissioners. Although we discussed a great deal of issues around telecommunications, practically every aspect that you could possibly imagine, we came to agreement on only two items. One was another bill that you may have heard about, which is on the Universal Service Fund. And this bill, which is very simply all that it is doing, is changing, modifying the definition of telecommunications and the definition of telecommunications service. I know that there are other parties here today that would like to amend the bill to do other things. I have heard from those parties, both in the SB 17 task force and since. I will very much put on the record that my personal belief is that all of the barriers in telecommunications will be coming down within the next 10 years. It will have to be addressed at the federal level, the state level, and the local level. Obviously, there are a lot of interests that want to protect their interests, but the technology is far more advanced than the policy direction. And I believe that sooner or later that we are going to be doing some of the very things people are asking you here to do today. But as the co-chair of that task force, my duty here today as the co-chair, and Senator Nelson would do the same thing if he was here, was to present the bill that we've been asked to by the task force to present to you and ask you to pass it. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Hey, Lee, will you stay here just in case people want to ask you questions? Thank you.
Commercial. Can you hear me?
Senator, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. David Nelson, State Senator from District 29, and as Senator Devlin indicated, we were the co-chairs of and spent a year going through this, and it's, you have a very complicated issue in front of you. My sense of the whole of all the testimony was is we're going towards deregulation on a nationwide basis. That's the direction we're going to go, and that this bill is one that's going to move in that direction, and that's what we ought to be doing. So I don't know what more I can add to it. It's a complicated issue, as they all are, and you've got competing folks on each side. But I think at a national level, it's going towards deregulation, and I know there's the consumer protection issues that are involved in all this, but if you can't get some of that, let's get something of what we can get and help our state out. So, is that kind of what you said here, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chairman, if I might comment just briefly. I think Senator Nelson and I are in agreement in terms of believing that the barriers are all going to come down. Obviously, you're as aware as we are that your constituents are just as apt to receive their video service in some cases now by their telephone company and their telephone service by their cable company. And in my discussions with the wireless industry, if they can get the advances that they anticipate that they can get in the forthcoming years, although that you can do little clips and stuff on cell phones, it probably isn't too far before they will be able to actually transmit video also. And so that you will see all of these different platforms basically providing the whole gamut of services to consumers. And we have a system of regulation that actually still lives in the previous century, if not the previous century, probably in the 1950s.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm in complete support of the bill itself. Most people, if not everybody's here, are concerned about the amendments, potential amendments. I just wish, imagine how many people we have in the room if we could have amended the Oasis Project into this bill, too. Any questions of these fine gentlemen? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I don't think I have any questions of these gentlemen at this time, but I would like, are we going to hear more discussion about the Dash Ones? And what they do to this original bill. If so, then I would just ask that Mr. Byer stick around. In case I had questions after hearing
that's
more.
That's a good request.
Chairman, if I might make one final comment. The good chairman from the PUC commented to me just now that it sounded like I was in favor of every amendment that's before you. I want to tell you that I'm not necessarily opposed to the amendments that are before you, because I think sooner or later you're going to have that discussion. But I think once you get into the complexity of this issue, you're going to realize that it's an extremely complex issues, and there's a lot of T's to cross and a lot of I's to dot. And I don't know if you have the time in this session to do that. But I'm just saying inevitably you're either going to be sitting here doing it now or you're going to be sitting here in the next few sessions addressing these issues.
Well, we're going to have a nice conversation today with a bunch of nice people. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. All right. I'm just going to go. Larry Richmond, Brant, please come up again. Thank you for your courtesy there. Doug Cooley and Ken, I don't know what this says, from CWA.
Mr. Chair.
I'm just going right down the line here, so some of you are going to be up here on one side and on the other, and just everybody be nice. Brant, go ahead.
Can I beg your indulgence for just
yes,
a second?
Sir.
I think the representatives from Quest are going to go through the Dash 1 section by section.
That's how you want to do it. That's fine.
I think that would work.
Everybody sit down. Ginny Lang, Judy Pepler, and Larry Richmond. That sounds fair. Whoever wants to start, go right ahead.
Jenny's going to start. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. We appreciate your willingness to have us be here today. For the record, my name is Ginny Lang. I represent Quest. With me today is Judy Pepler, president of Quest Oregon, and Larry Reichman with the Perkins Coie Law Firm. We're here to urge approval of the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 982. What I'd like to do is give you a brief overview of what's in the Dash 1 amendments. then ask Ms. Pepler and Mr. Reichman to provide a little detail on the market here in Oregon and a few comments on objections that we have heard to the Dash 1 amendments in another committee. So with that, the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 982 seeks to create comparable regulatory treatment for all forms of voice communications and to eliminate rate regulation for four telephone companies: Quest, CenturyTel, Embark, which used to be the old Sprint telephone company, and Verizon. The goal is to allow those companies to compete in the marketplace in the same manner as their most direct competitors: cable companies, wireless, and voice over internet protocol providers. Let me start by talking about what's in the Dash 1 amendment. Section 4 defines several terms used in the bill. Of most interest are the definitions of alternative provider, which would include those companies that offer cable service, voice over internet protocol, and wireless service. Functionally equivalent or substitutable service, that is, a service that provides similar or meets similar customer needs as dial tone from us. And finally, the primary line basic local exchange service, that is, the first residence line or the first business line for an individual customer location. Section 5 lifts remaining monopoly-era regulations on wireline services that have never applied to competitive local exchange carriers, companies that are referred to as CLECs, wireless or cable companies, or the emerging voice over internet protocol providers. Quest has been under a price cap regulatory structure for the past 8 years, resulting from legislation that the Legislative Assembly passed in 1999. As part of that, the company has been exempt from many of these very same sections of statutes since that time without any implementation difficulties for the commission or staff and without harm to customers or competitors. Section 6 permits the Public Utility Commission to revoke the exemption from regulation or impose conditions for specific services in relevant markets if they are not subject to effective competition. Commissioner Beyer mentioned that there are concerns about the Commission's ability to get information from other providers. We believe that under other sections of ORS 756 and ORS 759 that there are, in fact, ample opportunities for the Commission to ask for and require information from other companies to make this finding. And so we believe that by having the re-regulation elements in this part of the bill, that it provides the commission with adequate protections for customers and safeguards for competitors as well. Section 6, I already talked about that. Sections 7 and 8 maintain the affordable availability of that first line for businesses and residences by requiring that those rates for those two services at $12.80 for our company for a residential line and $26 for a business line be capped at those current rates for at least 3 years. After that time, a company would have to go to the Public Utility Commission and seek permission by way of a petition to increase rates, just as they would today. So from the standpoint of the first line for a business customer or residence customer, there is no change from the rate structure for those people that would be any different than the way it is today. companies would continue to provide rate information on the business rates and residential rates for that group of customers. Section 9 covers something called access charges. Those are the charges that long-distance providers pay to complete calls to the four companies that are affected by the Dash 1 amendments: Quest, CenturyTel, Verizon, and Embark. Those would be capped at current rates. The four utilities in question would maintain filed tariffs describing the rates, terms, and conditions for access charges. Sections 10 and 11 permanently capped existing routes and fees for extended area service, sometimes known as EAS. Those are areas that sometimes people refer to as local calling areas, so that, for example, from the Salem area, you can call Woodburn without paying an extra toll charge, or from Portland, you can call most of the surrounding communities without paying any extra long-distance charges. Those routes and the fees that are in place for those services would be capped at today's rates. Section 12 addresses the availability of essentially dial tone and requires that the four companies involved in the Dash 1 amendment offer it with EAS on a standalone basis. That is, that no customer would be forced to buy some kind of a package. If a customer doesn't want the bells and whistles that go along with telephone service in today's world, they just want dial tone, that's all that they would be required to buy. The utility is not required, however, to provide dial tone services in a new building or development if one of two conditions were to occur. The two conditions are if another provider has signed off on an exclusive arrangement with a developer to provide all of the communication services in that area, or if a developer denies the utility, one of the four companies involved here, access on some kind of reasonable terms. What we're running into more and more, especially with new housing in areas like Bend or other parts of the state, is that along with providing many amenities in a housing development, a developer signs on to somebody to provide all the cable TV service, all of the telecommunication service, maybe a smart home concept with wiring for all kinds of different things, and they want one provider to do that. Because we, as utilities, still have a carrier of last resort responsibility or obligation, if one of the persons in that kind of a development decided that they wanted to have their telecommunication service from Quest, we would, under today's laws, be required to put facilities into just that residence, which might be one of several hundred homes. So what we would ask for in this section of the bill is that if one of those two conditions occurred, that we would not have to serve. Here's what the amendment does not do. It does not change any of the wholesale requirements or agreements currently in place, which are required and overseen through the Telecommunications Act of 1996 federal law. It does not eliminate privilege taxes, franchise fees, universal service fund charges, or payment of PUC fees or 911 surcharges. It does not change or eliminate any of the consumer protections in place today. Service quality measurements, rules pertaining to interactions with customers, and all of the federal requirements pertaining to interconnection agreements continue to be under the purview of the Public Utility Commission. Mm-hmm. So with that, I would say to you that we believe that this amendment, which is the section that we worked very long and hard with Chair Beyer and his staff to come to agreement on, provides not only the flexibility that we need to compete head-to-head with cable companies, wireless companies, and the new providers in the market, but also provides for the safeguards that are required for the kind of consumer protection that we believe customers in this state deserve. So at that point, at this point, Mr. Chairman, if I could ask Ms. Pepler to talk a little bit about today's market.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Judy Pepler. I am the president for Quest here in Oregon, and I wanted to also urge the approval of the Dash 1 Amendment to Senate Bill 982. I want to give you just a few facts and data on the competitive marketplace that we find ourselves in this state. You're going to hear from a number of people that it's not competitive enough. I will tell you that it's very competitive from our perspective. Right now, residential and business customers can choose up to 9 different wireless providers in the state. They can buy voice over IP services from companies like Comcast, Vonage, Skype. You've seen the advertisement. You can hardly turn on the TV or listen to the radio without being inundated with these ads. There's also over 200 certified competitors in Oregon, the CLEX that Ginny mentioned, that are providing services primarily in the business market. There are these are big companies like AT&T or Verizon, also Integra, Exo, Ben Broadband, Rio, Unicom. There's a number of them in the state, and they compete with us primarily in the business market. On the residential side, we've lost 10 to 15% of the market to wireless providers. That's an even higher number for the under 25 age. I'm sure all of you have kids, and almost all of them have a cell phone and rarely receive a call on the wireline phone anymore. And then there's 2.5 million wireless phones in Oregon right now. That's one for every adult in the state. We've also seen another 10 to 15% of the residential market go to the voice over IP services like Comcast, Vonage, Skype, etc. In the business market, based on 2005 data, we had lost close to 40% of the business market in the state. That number has only increased for us. And interestingly enough, we've seen some of our highest losses in some of the more what you would consider rural areas like Hermiston, Roseburg area. You may have seen we recently lost the city of Medford when they decided to go with VoIP services provided by ShoreTel of Sunnyvale, California. So we're seeing increasing competition in all sectors of the market. Given that, we thought it was appropriate to work with the chairman to try to craft some deregulation language that would work for both us and would work for the commission, and we think the Dash 1 Amendment is that type of language. We think the safeguards that the PUC negotiated are adequate to protect consumers. There's price caps for the 1FR, or the residential line and the business line, and they do have the ability to re-regulate, and I think Larry's going to talk real briefly about the legal ability to get the information that the chair was worried about. The last point I would make is we've had price or rate deregulation like is contemplated in this amendment in 11 of the 14 states that we serve, and in some of those states for several years. It has not driven competition out of the marketplace. Customers in those states have lots of options and actually have benefited from the increased competition in the market. We think that the safeguards are there and that this is the appropriate next step for the state to take.
Thank you. Excuse me. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Larry Reichman. I'm here on behalf of Quest today to speak in favor of the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 982. I will respond to some testimony previously submitted before the House Consumer Protection Committee by a group of competitors known as CLEX, Competitive Local Exchange Carriers, and by a group of business customers. I'm sure you'll hear the same arguments here today. The opponents of this bill rely extensively on a decision that the PUC issued in 2006, which granted in part and denied in part Quest's petition to deregulate a number of business services. They claim that this decision shows that there is insufficient competition in the telecommunications market to justify the deregulation that this bill would achieve. Chairman Beyer referred to that decision as well. The PUC's decision actually sheds very little light on the state of competition in the telecommunications market today. Because the PUC refused to consider competition from a number of sources, including wireless, cable, and voice over IP providers. The PUC completely refused to consider evidence of competition from providers that utilize anything other than traditional landline facilities, stating that these providers are, quote, beyond the regulatory span of the Commission's authority, close quote. With respect to wireless providers, the Commission also stated that these new market entrants have no track records of success, sustainability, or cross-elasticity with existing service offerings. In view of the facts that there are approximately 2.5 million wireless phones currently subscribed to in Oregon, and that many customers are completely replacing their landline phones with a wireless phone, this statement is fairly remarkable, and I think by itself demonstrates the limited usefulness of the Commission's decision. In addition to wireless, cable companies and voice over IP providers are making serious competitive inroads, as Judy discussed. The PUC also refused to consider any of that data. Moreover, while the Commission considered only landline competition, it did not even consider the full extent of that competition. The PUC issued a request to obtain competitive data from CLEX. Many companies, including the largest facilities-based competitive provider in Oregon, refused to respond to the survey. Quest asked the Commission to subpoena that information, and the Commission refused that request. They did not refuse the request because they lacked the power. What they said is, we've already distributed the data from other companies in an aggregated form. If we get that information and add it to it, it will identify the competitive lines from that company. We don't want to do that. So it's important to note that the Commission did not state it lacked the power, nor does it lack the power to get information. It just chose not to do it. In fact, rewarded that company for not responding. In addition, Quest offered evidence regarding the number of wholesale lines that it was providing to its CLEC competitors, but the PUC refused to consider much of this information. The Commission decided to consider only services known as UniLoop, which is the bare wire that Quest leases to its competitors. The PUC refused to consider the most popular form of competition or competitive wholesale service that Quest provides, which is known as Quest Platform Plus or QPP, which is a bundled offering of the loop, switching, and some other services that, in fact, make it very easy for a competitor to enter the market. So, as you can see, the Commission's decision was based on a very, very limited amount of information. It's also based on data that, frankly, is relatively stale today. The decision was based on data from February 2005. The market is very different today and continues to evolve. Considering all the limitations that the Commission placed on the type of evidence it would consider, the result of that deregulation case was preordained. This decision, we think, demonstrates that deregulation needs to be accomplished by a forward-looking policy decision of this legislature that considers all forms of competing and substitutable services in today's competitive market. The Commission apparently felt that it lacked the power to consider all these forms of competition, but obviously this body does not. The CLEX also argued that the bill may harm competitors. In fact, it does no such thing. Under the Federal Telecommunications Act of 96, ILECs, incumbent local exchange carriers like Quest, are required to lease portions of their network at cost-based rates to their competitors. These rates and other terms and conditions are established by the PUC. Nothing in this bill affects these wholesale arrangements that are required by federal law. They also claim that Quest and others will be exempt from statutory protections against predatory pricing. However, they are unable to point to any evidence that Quest or any other company has engaged in predatory pricing in the past. Quest has had the power to lower its rates since 1999 when it opted into Senate Bill 622. Despite this experience, the CLEX offer no shred of evidence that Quest has engaged in predatory pricing in this state or in any of the 11 other states in which Quest has had a level of deregulation that this bill would achieve. Moreover, this bill contains an important safeguard that would protect against the possibility that deregulation could lead to a reduction in the level of competition. The Commission has the power to re-regulate any service if it finds that the service is not subject to effective price-constraining competition. And again, we think it's quite clear that under existing law, the Commission has the power to obtain information from any provider. And I'll just reference you to ORS 756.538, which allows the Commission to obtain information from any person within or without the state for use in any investigation or any proceeding. Finally, Tracer presents a different argument. Whereas the CLEC speculate that that ILECs will lower prices to gain market share, Tracer argues that the bill will allow ILECs to raise prices over the competitive level. Obviously, Quest cannot both raise and lower prices for the same services at the same time, so at least one of these predictions must be wrong. In fact, the truth is that market forces in this competitive industry will constrain the ability of ILECs to raise prices, just like it constrains the ability of wireless, cable, and voice over IP providers to raise prices even in the absence of regulation. In addition, the bill includes protections for the utility's smallest customers to ensure they could still obtain telephone service at affordable rates. It freezes for 3 years the price of single-line service into any residence or business location in the state at current levels. In addition, economic support for low-income customers continues to be available. I'd like to thank you for your attention, and I'd be pleased to answer any questions.
Well, I know this much. I don't know if we need more or less regulation, but after what I've heard here so far, we sure could use some simplification. This is, any questions of these very nice people? Representative Berger.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. We had testimony a few minutes ago that this is fairly light deregulation. If you really wanted to go further, what would this include? What's missing here that you'd...
Chair Schaffler, Representative Berger, we in a lot of the other states where we've had deregulation, there is not the ability for the commission to go back in and re-regulate services. It's a deregulation, and we move forward. In other states, there also might be a price cap on the single line residence and business, but it increases automatically or has some kind of a trigger mechanism. In the other states, you don't have to go in front of the commission for a proceeding to have the rates increased. We are also continue to be subject under this to service quality requirements, customer complaint requirements, and in other states we have a much less requirement in that regard as well. So, you know, I would say Chairman Beyer actually negotiated a very tough deal if you look at it in comparison to the other states where we serve.
Representative Berger.
Yeah, thank you for that testimony, because I was surprised at how light this was when I first saw these provisions in light of the competitive marketplace that you are working in. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we're going to find out that some people don't feel it so
I
light.
Sure that's true, Mr. Chair.
I want, Ms. Kepler, I want to, what you just said here a minute ago, though, in other states where they've done this kind of deregulation, they've made it a policy that they are incapable of ever going back and regulating again?
Chair Schaffler, that's correct. Or there's no specific language that allows them to do that. I suppose they probably could take an action, but there's no specific language like we've negotiated that allows them to do that.
All right. Thank you very much. Any further questions? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just following up on the Chair's question, for anybody, the states where deregulation has happened that you operate, has that happened legislatively or has it happened by actions of the Regulatory Commission?
Chair Schaffler, Representative Rosenbaum, in probably two-thirds of the states, it has happened legislatively. In some, like Washington State, for instance, we have what's called an A4 proceeding, an alternative form of regulation proceeding, and I believe Minnesota was similar. But in many, if not most of the rest of the states, it's been legislative action.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chair, have you, in any of the states that have deregulated, have you known any of the services that were deregulated to be re-regulated once they've been deregulated? I mean, maybe not just in Quest territory, but anywhere. I haven't heard of that happening.
Representative Schaffler, Representative Rosenbaum, no, I haven't heard of that either.
Any further questions of this panel? Representative Woodward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Previously, I think the commissioner stated that he had concerns about his ability to re-regulate, and in your testimony you're saying that he has the ability to re-regulate. So I'm wondering what causes the discrepancy in point of view from your perspective as opposed to the Public Utility Commissioner's.
Chair Schaffler, Representative Holby, I believe the Chair's concern is that they don't necessarily agree with our analysis on what their subpoena powers are. And we believe that they can subpoena the information from any other provider in the state and get the information that they need. They don't necessarily agree with our analysis of that. And if they don't have the data. We don't have access necessarily, we don't have access to our competitors' data. So we can see if we've lost a line, if the customer has taken their telephone number with them, we can see where they've gone. But if you call the cable company, for instance, if you call Ben Broadband to buy cable service before you call us for phone service and you decide to take all your services from Ben Broadband, we don't have access to those numbers. And so in order to get the appropriate picture of the competitive marketplace, that kind of data needs to be provided from the competitive companies because we don't have access to all of it. I think that's the concern.
Any further questions, this panel? All right. Thank you very much. And I know that the chair is here. Go ahead. Sit on down. And the staff's been listening diligently. I think as the hearing goes on, we'll come to the end. Maybe I'll ask somebody, you guys come up and rebut any of the stuff you heard from pros and cons, just so we can kind of get moving here. I'd like to call Art Butler. And I apologize to you, Mr. Butler. We had this scheduled, and you drove all the way here, and we didn't hear it. So I didn't see you 100 miles away. And also Brant Wolf and Doug Cooley. But I just wanted to apologize to you personally, because I know you drove here last week, and we didn't hear it. But that's... I'm sorry I didn't get up.
Thank you. It's the legislature. I know that's what happens.
Yeah, okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Art Butler. I'm an attorney with the Ader Wynn Law Firm. I'm here on behalf of Tracer. Tracer is a coalition that represents the interests of large telecommunications users. As large users, or sometimes referred to as enterprise customers, Tracer members have a vital interest in ensuring that rates for important services remain fair, just, and reasonable, and in ensuring that the state both creates and maintains an effectively competitive marketplace that's capable of producing public benefits. I am here today to testify in opposition to the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 982 for two reasons. First, we are concerned that the bill would deregulate services, notwithstanding the fact that there is not sufficient competition to constrain the incumbent's pricing to the competitive level. And secondly, it removes some important protections against predatory pricing, which we think could damage the competition that we do have here. The basis for the Dash 1 amendments is a legislative finding, express or implied, that there is effective price-constraining competition in the Oregon market. That is inconsistent with the experience of Tracer members, with an expert analysis which we had commissioned for the proceeding that Chairman Beyer referred to, as UX 29, which was a comprehensive examination of competition for Quest's switched business services in Oregon. It is inconsistent with the Commission's finding in UX 29, and it is inconsistent with the report of the Commission to the legislature on the state of competition in Oregon, which was dated January of this year. In UX 29, the Commission specifically concluded, after examination of the evidence, that within Portland and Clackamas, the Quest basic business services provided to customers who have four or more lines are subject to price and service competition, but basic business services for customers with fewer than four lines are not subject to effective price and service competition. And PBX, Centrex, and ISDN services, which are the services which medium and large businesses use, are still not subject to price or service competition sufficient to permit deregulation even in Portland Clackamas market. The Commission also found that Quest clearly dominated the telecommunications market for all business services outside of Portland and Clackamas rate centers. In its report to the legislature, the Commission found that competitive conditions varied widely across the state and that overall CLEX, or the competitive providers, had only 16% of the market. Now, that's consistent with the FCC's most recent report on the state of local competition, which also found that CLEX had 16% of the market. That's down from 19% 6 months previously. You heard from Quest testimony that there's growing competition from wireless, from cable, and from VoIP, or Voice Over Internet Protocol services. those are not substitutes for the wireline services that enterprise customers buy. While enterprise customers buy a considerable amount of wireless services, those services are an adjunct to enable employees to communicate while they are mobile. They do not replace and are not a substitute for the wireline service that enterprise customers use. Cable companies, as a general matter, have not deployed their plant to most business areas. And even where they do, they are only beginning to offer services to businesses and then only to the smallest businesses who can be served with the products that are made available for residential customers. They don't have the reliability or the services to be able to satisfy the data requirements of enterprise customers. VoIP services, they are fledgling services primarily used in the enterprise market for internal communications between facilities and for substitute for long distance. And VoIP, unfortunately, right now is under a tremendous cloud of uncertainty. 2 months ago, Verizon obtained a jury verdict against Vonage because of its violation, allegedly, of three Verizon patents, which govern the translation of VoIP calls to the traditional public switch network. That case is under appeal. Those patents are very broad, and Verizon has indicated it does not intend to license the technology, and that if it should get an affirmation of the decision by the Court of Appeals, that it may well seek to extend lawsuits against other VoIP providers and perhaps even cable companies. At this point, there is simply too much uncertainty about VoIP to rely on that as any basis whatsoever for deregulating services. Finally, I'd like to make the point that Quest and the other incumbents have ample flexibility under current law to respond to competition. Competition does not force you to increase your price. Quest, as it testified, has been under price cap regulation. It's been able to change prices below a price cap and above a statutory floor, basically at will. The only thing that this bill would really accomplish would be to allow them to increase prices where they have market power. The real effect, again, I say, is the ability to increase prices. It is not necessary in order to respond to competition, and in fact, the Commission in its report to the legislature specifically noted that there were no statutes that should be enacted, amended, or repealed in order to respond to the competitive telecommunications environment or promote the orderly deregulation of the telecommunications industry. Finally, I wanted to make that point again about our concern about removal of these statutory price floors, about predatory pricing. Mr. Reichman said, well, you can't either have Quest increasing prices or lowering prices. The concern we're afraid of is that where the incumbents face competition, they can lower prices, engage in predatory pricing, lower them below the statutory price floor, drive the competitors out of business, then jack the prices up. In areas where they don't have effective competition, they're not worried about the competition, they can increase those prices immediately. And we just do not believe that there is sufficient competition to constrain the incumbents from exercising that market power and increasing prices above the competitive level. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association. The OTA is a statewide trade group that represents all the local traditional telephone companies in the state, with the exception of Quest and Frontier Communications, which operates down in southern Oregon. Two parts of my testimony. The first is in regards to the bill, Senate Bill 982. As a member of the SB 17 Task Force, we support that bill and what it attempts to do. Moving beyond that to the Dash 1s, the OTA certainly supports the Dash 1 amendments. We believe the time is right for something like this to pass this body. I think that it's just self-evident that there is competition, and any argument to the contrary, you would just have to suspend disbelief to go along with that. There is no doubt that we lose customers month after month, quarter after quarter, year after year, for several years. That happens right now. And the only thing this bill does is allow our members to respond effectively to that competition. This is not deregulation. This is some pricing flexibility. There are chapters and chapters of Oregon administrative rules that apply to us and not our competitors that remain in place even if this bill is passed. It goes on and on and on. I could go on and on and on. But
thank
I won't.
You for not, Mr.
Thank you. You're quite welcome. I don't want to belabor anything that's been said already, so I'll just pass the mic over to my colleague, Mr. Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Doug Cooley. I work for CenturyTel. We're a telephone company here in Oregon, sprinkled around many the rural communities throughout the state. CenturyTel supports the bill and the Dash 1 amendments to the bill. We believe that's a needed update to Oregon's telecommunications laws. And I think, as you've already talked about and heard, technology has had a large impact on the telecommunications market over the past few years, and Oregonians can now choose from several different sources for their dial tone. And I won't list them all out, but there's wireless, there's cable, there's the internet-based Vonage type, and we've all seen the commercials. I've also seen all the coverage maps that are advertised for cell phone companies, and they provide excellent coverage throughout the state, and you can review those all on their websites also. Like the other telephone company, CenturyTel tracks where we move a telephone customer's number to when they decide to leave CenturyTel. So we know that there are choices out there in the market. We also know that there are business and residential choices in the market. We've moved both, and we keep track of that. And as Mr. Wolf said, we watch this week after week and month after month. What the Dash 1 amendments do is take a step towards giving us some of the pricing flexibility that our competitors already enjoy. One other thing that I think is worth mentioning, that in this diverse market where there's several companies that can compete for the dial tone, there are only four that don't have the marketing flexibility that the others do. And why is that? Because of outdated telecom laws that state that companies with more than 50,000 customers, for example, have more restrictions than those with less than 50,000. So a company like mine, CenturyTel, we serve over 60,000 customers at present in Oregon, scattered among various communities in Oregon, and we still seek approval from the Public Utilities Commission on the services that we offer, when we offer them, where we offer them, and at what price. However, this 50,000 line rule does not apply to the cable companies, the competitors, the wireless. So if you're, Integra or Comcast or Singular or, some of the other bigger companies that have more than 50,000 lines, this rule does not apply to them either. So to illustrate just a little bit further, in a community such as Estacada or Staten, the cable company can offer dial tone and other packages as it sees fit. The cell phone companies can, and the landline telephone companies can. But in a community such as Silverton and Lebanon, the landline telephone company has marketing restrictions by the PUC that all of the other dial tone providers that serve those communities do not have. So CenturyTel believes it's time to give all the dial tone providers an equal opportunity to market products and packages with the same timely, flexible, and quick-to-market opportunities that the competitors do. And as Mr. Wolf said, this is really only a step in that direction. While this bill does provide some marketing flexibility for those four companies, it also provides consumer safeguards that customers of the other dial tone providers would still not experience. First, the price for a single-line business or residence is capped for 3 years at the PUC, and you've heard enough testimony on that. Second, local calling scopes and the prices remain the same. Third, the PUC retains the ability to re-regulate, and we've already talked about that, and the ability for them to get that information so that they can look at the market accurately. Also, as Brant mentioned, all the other reporting mechanisms that we're already under, the wholesale agreements stay the same, the service quality reports that we turn in every single month to the PUC remain the same. Basically, it doesn't really deregulate these four companies, but gives us the ability to offer our products quickly and flexibly. We simply believe that this bill would improve our ability to offer customers cost-saving packages and choices in our markets, and it maintains the balance of consumer protections that our customers expect also. So CenturyTel encourages you to support the Dash 1 amendments to the bill. And I'm available for any questions
if
you should have.
Any questions of these gentlemen? All right. Thank you, guys. I'd like to call, just Mr. John DiLorenzo at this time. And we will have everybody up here.
Mr. Chairman, John DiLorenzo, don't be scared. All the stuff I just gave to your committee assistant, it's a lot of material, but I promised the chair that I'm going to summarize, as I promised Representative Holby and his committee.
Well, Mr. DiLorenzo, since I'm such a great supporter of the wood fiber industry, I'm grateful for all your work.
He gives me
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John DiLorenzo with the law firm of Davis Wright Tremaine. I'm here on behalf of my clients Integra Telecom, XO Communications, Time Warner Telecom, and Echelon Telecom. We are competitive local exchange carriers as opposed to the Quests of the world who have testified before you, who are the incumbent local exchange carriers. The incumbents are the survivors of the Bell system. We are the new folks on the block who are dependent in large part on the incumbents' infrastructure as we compete with them for business services on hard lines. We are not wireless or internet providers. We are primarily direct competitors for hard lines. We are opposed to the Dash 1 amendments for a number of reasons. First and foremost is that there is insufficient competition to warrant deregulation of a virtual monopoly. And let me tell you why. Last summer, the Public Utility Commission denied Quest's request to deregulate its business services. They had the right under a statute to petition the Public Utility Commission to request deregulation. The statute allows the PUC to deregulate them if it finds that competition exists in the relevant markets and service categories. The PUC found sufficient competition existed to justify deregulating only for multi-line business services and only in Portland, not for one or two line business services in Portland and not anywhere else in the state. Now, in your materials, I've attached the PUC order. If you were ever inclined to review it, at page 20, there is a paragraph that is most telling. And that paragraph, portions of it reads, quote, "Even being so generous as to treat all Celix statewide lines as if they were in the Portland Rate Center, when just UNE-L and facility-based lines are counted, Quest retains a market share greater than 75%. They also state, quote, "such a level of market concentration a decade after the Telecommunications Act of 1996 and several decades of market open to competitors, coupled with a marketing strategy," this is a strategy by Quest, "that has kept prices for those services at their maximum permissible levels, fails to meet even the most minimal level of proof of price and service competition. We find that Quest has not met its burden with respect to these services." Now, despite this very recent decision, which was from this last summer, and this is very important, and with no countervailing study to support a contrary finding, nothing, Quest would have you deregulate all of its services, its business services statewide. I reviewed very quickly Quest's testimony, while the hard copies of it, while their folks were testifying. And their testimony essentially reads like an appellate brief, criticizing the PUC's decision, calling its processes arbitrary, taking other shots at the PUC methodology, yet Quest has never appealed that decision. Instead, they seek relief from you without any justification, any study, without meeting its burden that there is competition other than by just saying it. Now, secondly, the Dash 1 amendments open the door to anti-competitive behavior. This is because the amendments exempt Quest from statutory protections against predatory pricing and market domination. First of all, they exempt Quest from having to price list their products any longer. And I've attached in your materials examples of price lists that they today file with the Public Utility Commission so that competitors can know what types of pricing they are offering for what types of service, and so current customers can know whether they're offering a better deal to someone who is similarly situated. They would no longer have to file those types of price lists, so no one would ever know whether they were offering customer A as good a deal as they were offering customer B. In addition, it would abolish statutes that establish price floors, that prohibit unjust discrimination in rates, that prohibit undue preferences and prejudices, and that require public access to these schedules. Well, if they eliminate all these protections, there is no reason why Quest could not offer my client's customers cut rates while charging their own captive customers the same rates. Once my clients were out of business, they could then raise the rates of the new customer base that they had captured. Now, the arguments that Quest makes is, first of all, that, well, we would never do that, and that we've had an opportunity to do that, and we've never done that before. Well, they haven't done that before, in part because we would have known that they were doing it because of the price lists that have to be filed and the other access to information which we have. They also say, though, that we're just not that kind of a company, essentially, and we wouldn't do that. And we agree that there are people of goodwill in Quest management structure, no doubt about it. But frankly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would much rather rely upon statutory protections than the goodwill of someone who happens to occupy management positions at a competitor that has such a dominant position in the market. That's the long and the short of it. The antitrust laws are inadequate. They don't help us because they would only help us once we were out of business. Now, third, we object because although these amendments seek to deregulate Quest, they still preserve the monopoly protections that Quest has enjoyed for years and years and years. For instance, the right to condemn private property they still would retain. The right to revenue neutrality if the FEC reduces interstate rates. You see, they want unlimited upside, but if they're going to incur more costs, they want those to be revenue neutral, so they will have protection from the downside. If you are going to deregulate a business, you should provide them unlimited upside and unlimited risk. They want to have no risk or little risk and yet unlimited upside. They have an advantageous way of paying fees to local governments. They admit that in their testimony. They admit that the protections that ILEX have over CELEX is unfair, maybe should be changed, but they say that isn't what this bill is about. Well, it is, because you're deregulating them, yet you're retaining these monopoly advantages that they have had for years and years and years. Now, finally, these amendments do not adequately protect customers, and I will tell you why. First of all, Section 7 purports to impose a price cap on primary basic line service. That's just basic service to ma and pa for residential service. But Section 5.5 allows them to avoid that price cap if they bundle that service with other goodies that ma and pa may want. In addition, Section 10 suggests the price caps will be imposed on extended area services. But Section 10.3 of the amendment says, but there's no price cap for basic service for residents if they're part of a package or a bundle. In addition, although Section 12 requires Quest to make primary basic line exchange service available to all customers, there is nothing that requires them to inform the customers that they have that right to insist on primary basic line coverage as opposed to by the bundle. Finally, these amendments reflect the worst of a flawed process. You've heard a lot about the Senate Bill 17 Task Force. That is the task force that represented everyone: CELEX, ILEX, wireless, cable interests, CUB, customer groups. They agreed on consensus amendments which are in this bill. This bill is what they agreed to. They did not agree to the Dash 1 amendments. They were unable to have any consensus regarding deregulating Quest. Instead, Quest suggests that you take this consensus product and then put in the provisions that no one else could agree to that benefit only Quest and the ILEX. Quest and the other ILEX are still virtual monopolies in their historic service areas. It is not good public policy to deregulate monopolies. Deregulation should only occur when a competitive marketplace exists, and that day is a ways away. And if Quest disagrees with it, they have a burden to show that competition exists, and we have seen no such study. They have not met their burden, and you should reject the Dash 1 amendments.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. DiLorenzo? Representative Berger.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. DiLorenzo. Let's talk about other states, because we had discussion earlier about other states and similar sort of deregulation, either light or heavier. What has it had the impact on your CLEC customers in those states? Do you know?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I have to confess that I am not expert as to what has occurred in the other states. I can tell you that I would be very, very surprised if other states' deregulation places CLEX in such a precarious position as this particular deregulation does. But I'm not qualified to respond to that. Yeah, I can get you information.
I guess what I'm interested in is whether there's evidence of this, underpricing. I guess that's what I'm referring to is there evidence that in other venues under other dereg, whether Quest or some of these other companies are underpricing meant to drive out competitive business? If it isn't a competitive environment, then why would you be worried about them competing unfairly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I know of no evidence whereby large companies like Quest have been purposely undercutting to drive out the competition. However, this is what public information is about. It is the accessibility to the public of this information that acts as a protection against that. And frankly, it is in the nature of large corporations that happen to be behemoths and occupy a majority of their marketplaces to seek more market. That's just in their nature. It is the behavior of large organizations to do that. It is the very reason why the Sherman Antitrust Act was passed. And why there is so much interest in watching out for market domination. Because ultimately, market domination on the short-term level can be good for customers because it gives them short-range, lower prices. But once all the competitors are out of business, the customers have no protection whatsoever, and there is no longer a competitive environment. What we are seeking here is working towards a competitive environment. That environment does not yet exist today.
Any Representative Holley, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. DiLorenzo, thank you for your perspective on this. But I'm kind of curious when you're going back through all this testimony about the market share and the PUC determination on that market share. Does that determination or include the wireless competition that has been talked about as well? You know, in fact, I guess in the Portland area, are you saying that the PUC found that 76% of telecommunications was controlled by Quest, I guess? And does that include the wireless telecommunications? Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holley, no, I don't believe that includes wireless. I think what the PUC finding means to me is that Quest controls 76% of the marketplace for businesses that require hard lines that are of less than two lines. And of all business hardline competition throughout hard lines throughout the rest of the state. Sure, wireless is a factor to consider, but I know of very few businesses that could run their businesses solely on wireless telecommunications at this point in time. You can't put together a 12-person conference call with wireless. I mean, there's lots of things that you need hard lines for. We couldn't run our business with just wireless. So, sure, wireless was not taken into account, but the market that the PUC was looking at least in this portion of the PUC order, was the hardline market for business. And in that business place, which is where we try to compete, there is not yet a state of competition, and therefore Quest does not deserve deregulation.
Yes, Representative, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, wouldn't you think that the, you know, your business, wouldn't you think that some of your people that work with your business use wireless phones as well, in addition to these hard lines?
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Holdy, of course. And, you know, I don't know how many lines we have in our business. We've got 400 lawyers in our law firm. We must have thousands and thousands and thousands of lines. And, yes, there is competition for our business. That isn't the market we're talking about here. We're talking about the barbershop that's got two lines, or the grocery store, or, you know, the small store, or the you know, the small business is what we're talking about. And in that area, there is not yet a state of competition, according to the PUC. Now, Quest or others can criticize the PUC order. There's two ways to do that. One would have been to appeal the order, and I don't believe that ever took place. And the other would be to come in with a countervailing study that shows that, yes, there is competition, and there is no such countervailing study. And one who seeks to deregulate ought to sustain some modicum of proof, some burden of proof, and there isn't one that's been put forward here.
Any further questions? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
Ken Sather, Jean Eng, and Jeff Boissonnette. Whoever sits down first, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ken Sather. I represent Communications Workers of America, Local 7906. Communication Workers of America in Oregon represent employees of Quest Communications, Century Telecommunications, AT&T, and BARC, as well as several non-telecommunication companies. The membership and I, along with unanimous agreement of the other CWA local presidents in Oregon, support Senate Bill 982-1. We believe this bill will create a level playing field and allow our members' employers to compete using the same rules as cable and wireless companies. As workers, we feel the effects of the advantages that cable companies have every day. Every day we're faced with line loss, and we're faced with force reductions. We feel this bill would create and maintain good union jobs that typically pay a living wage and provide health insurance, which is good for my members, and it's good for Oregon. We feel competition is alive and well in Oregon, and all companies which provide same or similar services should be allowed to compete using the same rules and guidelines. In addition, we believe this bill gives the Public Utility Commission the ability to re-regulate a company if adequate competition is not available to protect our consumers, which is also very important to us. The Oregon local presidents urge you to support Senate Bill 982-1. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Engelhardt.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Gene Eng, and I'm Vice President, Legislative Regulatory Affairs for Verizon in Oregon. And I've submitted to you -3 amendments, which are amendments to the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 982. And let me just briefly explain what these amendments are. They're what I would call like cleanup amendments to Section 5.5 and Section 6.1 of the -1 amendments to make it clear that packages as part of this deregulation effort are indeed deregulated. And so with those -3 amendments, Verizon supports this bill because we believe that the deregulatory aspects of the amendments will allow us to more effectively compete with our competitors, such as the cable companies, and offer additional consumer choice and value-added products and services. But I would qualify the support of these amendments by saying that if this bill were to be amended somewhere in the process where regulation of voice over IP and regulation of wireless were added back in, like in a previous version, Verizon would then again strongly oppose this bill. So thank you.
Thank you. Jeff, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Bissonette with the Citizens Utility Board, representing residential ratepayers of all utilities. So in addition to telecommunication issues, we also work on electricity and natural gas issues as well. I have provided to committee members a copy of a letter that our executive director, Bob Jenks, sent to the Public Utility Commission last week as developments around this bill were coming to the fore. I've signed up in support of Senate Bill 982 as presented. What you have heard is these are kind of the consensus measures from Senate Bill 17, the Senate Bill 17 task force during the interim. I think it's sort of, you know, this hearing is an example that after discussing these issues for a year, Senate Bill 982 is what was the consensus. I think the testimony that this committee has heard is kind of the rest of it. And so we're still, I don't think, not ready for prime time. And that's how we at CUB view the Dash 1 amendments. And so if the Dash 1 amendments were to be amended into the bill, we would stand opposed to the bill. But as I said, as of right now, Senate Bill 982 is the consensus out of the Senate Bill 17 task force, which Bob Jenks did serve on, and we strongly support. I'd be happy to sort of touch on any issues that are brought up in the letter. I will just say one thing. In House Bill 2621, which you've heard a lot of discussion about, which was kind of the attempt to try and strike a balance between deregulation and consumer protection, it was a struggle for our organization, who dearly believes that more consumer protection is needed in the area of telecommunications. Struggled mightily with the balance between deregulation and consumer protections. But although we did appreciate the Commission's attempt to try and strike that balance, and while House Bill 2621 was a very close call, we decided the trade-off wasn't enough, and we urged a no vote on 2621. What you have in the Dash 1 amendments is sort of the worst of all possible worlds, the deregulation without the consumer protections. And, you know, what I'm about to say, you'll hear yells behind me from the rest of the telecom industry. What we actually want is more consumer protection, more enforcement for the entire industry, because as you'll see when you look at consumer complaints from the Department of Justice, Oregon Department of Justice, telecommunications issues are regularly the number one area of complaint from consumers. Consumers need a place to go to complain and to get, and while it's very good for them to complain to the Attorney General is not in a position to deal with consumer complaints on a consumer-by-consumer basis the way the PUC is. They can simply kind of aggregate the complaints and respond to kind of whole sale issues that tend to, you know, sort of come up as trends. We think that the PUC ought to be given more authority to deal with consumer complaints, that they ought to have more enforcement authority to protect consumers, and right now that bill does not exist. And so we urge you to pass Senate Bill 982 in its current form, and if you choose to do anything that, we would be very strongly opposed. Appreciate the time. Be happy to answer questions.
Well, I'm just grateful the words automatic adjustment clause aren't in this bill or amendment.
You and me both.
Any questions of this fine panel? That was a name that you represented.
There we go.
All right, thanks, guys. All right, I'd like to call Andrea Fogue, Barb Young, and Steve Lanning. And those are the last folks I have on the list. If there's anybody else who wants to testify, let me know after these folks are done. Steve, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Steve Lanning with the Oregon AFL-CIO, and we support Senate Bill 982 with the Dash 1 amendments.
as Representative Berger called it, a light version of deregulation, and that's how we see it as well. We think that there's adequate consumer protections built into the bill, and we view it as a jobs issue. CWA, Ken Saylor testified for just a minute ago. It's one of our union affiliates, and we think it that this is good for jobs, especially union jobs, and we support it. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Schaffler, committee members. My name is Barb Young, and I am the Government Affairs Manager for Embark for the states of Oregon and Washington. Embark is the fourth largest local exchange carrier in the state. We have approximately 64,000 access lines, with our largest exchange being around 9,000 access lines and our smallest being 63. We serve predominantly rural Oregon. And in looking at who our competitors are, I won't regurgitate what people have told you, but we have all the players in our markets. And I'd like to add a couple more that weren't mentioned. Excuse me. We have some public municipalities and also a Hood River electric co-op that's competing with us. So we have some other competitors also. A couple things I would like to address. First of all, I think, Representative Hovey, you brought up a good point about market share. Be careful when you hear market share numbers bantered about. Both in the Quest case and also in the report that the Commission puts together for the legislature, those market share numbers are based strictly on looking at the ILEC and the CLEC. They're not looking at the market in total. And that is the case for both market share numbers based on access lines, but also market share based on revenue. And so I think that it's really limiting with regard to the extent of how large the market is. I can tell you that we have successful competitors in our territory using a fixed wireless application. So to say that wireless isn't really a useful application for business, I would disagree. He's eating our lunch some days, so he's doing a good job. Also, we all compete for the same customer. So when you hear some of the testimony from the CLEX with regard to the fact that we would not be subject to undue preference statutes or discrimination statutes, CLEX are not subject to those today. So if there's a worry about customer A paying more than customer B because there's no price list being filed, they don't file price lists today. So, again, the question is, is it appropriate for only Embark, who's competing, again, for the same customer in our market service territory, to be the one that's fully regulated as far as terms and conditions? And I think that's all, other than I urge your support on the Dash 1 Amendment for Senate Bill 982, and I will close it with that. Thank you.
Andrea, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Andrea Fogue with the League of Oregon Cities. The League supports Senate Bill 982 in its current form. However, we would oppose the Dash 1 amendments. We've been carefully watching this debate on the telecom deregulation with House Bill 2621. And while we support the ability of the PUC to protect consumers, we do have concerns with the deregulation portion. And for the record, if implemented through this legislation or any legislation this session, we want to make sure that telecom deregulation in no way unintended or implied has impact on local governments, our home rule authority, our state statutes or local regulations governing the relationship between municipalities and telecommunications service providers. So I think my attorneys will be happy now. So with that, that is always a concern for us, but you've heard today how complex, very complex, these issues are. And so, for example, one piece of complexity from our perspective has to do with some very careful negotiations back in 1989. And this was actually before Quest with U.S. West primarily. But we looked at the regulations that the incumbent local exchange carriers, that ILECs, are under. And because of that, they actually have, in a sense, a break in terms of what they pay in franchise fees. It's based on the basic local exchange not gross revenues, as a competitive local exchange carriers pay. And again, that was because of some of the extra responsibilities that they have being regulated, care of last resort, for example. And so that's something we haven't looked at in quite a while, and we want to make sure that if this moves forward, we're taking a look at those types of issues, again, in terms of the complexity of the regulations. Also, we are concerned that prices would increase under a telecommunications deregulation. And we've heard reports that for some types of rates, Oregon's rates are 30% less than they are in some of the other states that Quest operates in. And we don't know what that means exactly because, again, it is complex trying to understand exactly which rates these would be and how it would apply to cities as consumers, our citizens, business and industry. And so we're still trying to get a handle and assess that. But it is a concern not knowing what is going to happen with those rates. As you've heard today, the utilities, the incumbent local exchange carriers have the ability to lower rates right now, but we don't know what's going to happen on the other end of that if we move forward with this deregulation. So, again, something that we want to assess very carefully. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Andrea, you were in the room when we had testimony that there is a cap in this bill on single service lines and residential and business lines.
Right.
So your testimony that you don't know what happens to rates doesn't really jive with that, since the bill does have a cap in it.
Just on the first line.
I understand that, but after that, it's bundled services, which people can get. And I might add, since you haven't answered that one, I'll add the next one so you can answer both. You're also aware that there is direct competition for services provided to a company like Quest by municipal authorities, like within my district.
Right.
You want to speak to both of those?
Sure, Mr. Chair and Representative Berger. As Chair Schaffler said, we really don't know what's going to happen with rates because it is just that first line. And so we know there are many customers, residents, businesses, industry, as I mentioned, and that have multiple lines. And, yes, they tend to bundle those services, but that's part of what we're unraveling because there are many different ways that they can purchase those services, whether it's through a contract, they can tariff shop, lots of different things. So that 30% figure actually that I mentioned, that was in some conversations between Quest and the Public Utility Commission in relation to House Bill 2621. So that came from them, and we're still trying to figure out exactly what that means. And again, the types of rates that would potentially be impacted in Oregon. Again, that was in the context of lower than in other states where they operate. With regard to municipalities being in the business, yes, they are. As you know, in your district, the reason isn't necessarily because they want to be in the business. It's because of competition, and competition would not come to them to provide the services. So they stepped up because they needed to do that, and in the vast majority of cases. For example, Google locating in the Dalles, or the fact that now over in Monmouth Independence, they're offering triple.
Andrea, I'm going to cut you off right there. We're not going down that road.
Okay.
About municipalities versus, we've had that argument before. Any further questions of this nice panel? Because it's the hour. I hate to interrupt my friend from Iowa, who graduated from the greatest, the best Big Ten school there is, the University of Iowa. Okay. Any more questions?
Don't
want to get into the municipality versus the private industry. Forgive me, Representative, but I don't want to get. Okay. Any more questions? thank you very much. I appreciate it. And we could go point counterpoint all day long. There's not going to be any time for rebuttal today because we could be here till 9 o'clock. So I guess. I think this committee, I'm not sure, but I'm fairly confident there's consensus that the original bill is a good piece of work. But I just wanted the proponents and the opponents have their work cut out for them.
and I'm just going to leave it at that. You can rebut this nice committee. If there's not a broad consensus on how to amend or not to amend this bill, we're just not going to go there. I just want to be very plain on that. So everyone's work is cut out for them. With that, I'm going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 982. Anything for the good of the order? All right. Here we go.